Hi everyone. Hi, come on. All right, I have it quarter past, so maybe we can get going. Yeah, I guess you all heard there was a corona case here at the university. So, you know, the university leadership is looking into it, tracing contacts and all that. But I guess it just goes to show that, you know, we're in the midst of a second wave for. Now, hopefully it stabilizes a bit, but be careful. It's wash your hands and so on. It's, you know, you cannot repeat it enough. For you guys, probably it's, you know, wouldn't be too big a deal if you got infected, because for young people, it's not a very, very dangerous disease, but there, you know, the hospital is just over there. There are a lot of people in the risk group, so, you know, we have to be responsible. Yes, so for today, the plan is to look a little bit more at TensorFlow probability and do a bit more modeling with that, just to, you know, get you a little bit used to that kind of analysis and also learn a bit more about TensorFlow probability. We will look at a quite simple model, but it shows very nicely sort of the strengths of the framework at the end of the day. And then hopefully also you'll have a bit of collaboration time towards the end of the session. So I try to be a bit respectful of the fact that you have projects and deadlines and so on. Before we start, is there any questions, anything you want to have explained or re-explained? No, doesn't look to be the case, so let's just get started. Good. So what we'll start with is we'll load our data sets, and we'll do that in pandas. And what we'll look at is the following data. So in Wikipedia, you have a list of oil spills. And one of the cool things that you can do in pandas is tables like this, you can load straight from the web. And the way you do this is you will copy the URL and you go pandas.read.html. So with that, we load tables straight from a web page, and actually load 11 tables. And you know, there's no magic happening here. So this guy is, of course, so now I'm in the wrong browser, but if I were in Chrome, I could inspect the source code and see that. Well, this is just a table HTML tag, and pandas will just pull this out for you. And there's a lot of, you know, this is interpreted as a table, the footer is interpreted as a table. This is a table, of course, or probably a table of tables, something like this. And that's why we get 11 tables out of this. But the number zero, that's the big sort of oil spill table. And what I hopefully will be able to show you during this session is that actually, so oil production and exploration got safer over the years. So the amount of oil spilled on a year by year basis actually got significantly reduced, but we get more oil spills. And we'll do a bit of analysis to see is there sort of a change and trend, what's happening, and try to explain a little bit what's happening in the data. So the first thing that we need to do is, so we want to look at the amount spilled, so that's the tons here. And you know, sometimes you have this unknown, and this we want to convert to a none. So what we do is we make custom conversion function here, robust float. So if I were just to say float of unknown, I would get a value error, right? So what I'll do in this robust float is I'll write try return float x, accept value error, and what I get back in that case is a none. And with that, I extract the tons and I look at the worst case scenario. So I say tables zero, max tons, dot apply my function, robust float. So that is the tons spilled. And now what I want is the date, or at least the year. And then here I'm really just interested in the year. So I need to extract this year as well. So we need to write a conversion function for this as well. So my year shall be, again, table zero dates. It's dates here, because typically it's going on over a while. and I apply a function, apply. And for that, I just do a regular expression matching. So I say make an integer out of re.search. And then what I search for is just 4 digits. In X. And with group, I get this match out. So I get the years. So let's recap a little bit what happened here. So RE search will, so if I instead of X apply this to, let's just copy paste this guy out. So backslash D4 searches for 4 digits, right? And it says, yes, I found the match on character 9 to 13, and the match is this 2020. And then group will extract this match as a string. And of course, I want an integer out of that. So this is basically what's happening in here. Okay, now I have my tons and my year. So to look at the total amount spilled, what I do is I group by the year so that I put everything together and sum. And then also that, so before 1970, the data is a bit bad. So I restrict this actually to everything where the total, where the index is bigger than 1970, just to get data points where the uncertainty is just super high out. And you shouldn't plot it like this really, because it's individual counts. So there's no reason to connect this to a line. So there's no smooth transition between this number and that number. It's just individual observations. So let's do circle markers and no line. So what you see here is actually before around 2005, there was like a lot amount spilled. And then after 2005, sort of, yeah, we have some spillage, but besides, so this is of course the Deepwater Horizon. This is the beginning of, so there's a tanker that sank and is basically spilling since a long time. So it's not that there was a huge amount spilled all at once. It's just a very long ongoing incident. And this is a collision of a vessel in Asia Pacific. But so in general, you can see is sort of the total amount spilled is very low on a typical year. And here it was quite a bit higher, so sort of before the 2000s. And that just has to do with that the safety measures became better and better. And of course, sometimes you have a kind of outlier here. But let's look at the amount of, so the number of individual spills. And we can do this in a, you can just say y dot group by y itself. So the year group by the year, and the size of this is just a count. So this is a trick, if you want to sort of know the number of rows, you just say series.group by the series itself dot size. And then we restrict again to everything where from 1970 on. Yeah, this is will be everything 1970. Okay, what went wrong? Unrecognized marker style. Oh, yeah. So this marker style, maybe a little comment on this. So this is just telling matplotlib how to plot each individual point. So I could use D for a diamond. I could use T for a triangle. No. Square for a box. So this is. That's not, it's just a form thing. So, and here you actually see an interesting kind of trend, right? So before the 2000s, somehow you see actually fewer spills, but bigger ones. And then up here, we have much more recorded spills. And this can be part of sort of a trend where companies just get more transparent, or it's easier or harder to hide. But also, so in the early 2000s, we had this shale explosion in the US. So more and more shale gas was produced, shale oil was produced in the US. And the name of the game of shale is that you need much more wells. So you need to drill more often and have sort of higher chances of spilling. And what we'll do today is basically modeling this with a probabilistic model. So we'll say, when did the change happen? And what is the average rate that we see here before and after? So the yearly rate. That's interesting. There's a very similar analysis that was made for mining incidents in the late 60s and until the 2000s. So it's an interesting exercise. So we need TensorFlow. We need our TensorFlow probability. And then distributions. So we'll use distributions a lot. So we call this TFD. TensorFlow. Okay. So now let's make a model. And So we want a kind of Bayesian model. Spill count model. And we want to try two different functions for the transition. So we'll have one model where we just fit two different, we're talking rates. So n year, so we want a kind of exponential distribution for the, and we want two exponential distributions, one for the early rate and one for the late rate. But what I would like to do here is I use two different functions to define the transition. So one is just the step function. So we say before a given year, we use exponential distribution with the lower rate. And we talk counts of Poisson distributions, of course, the right one. So we'll have two Poisson distributions with two different rates, one for the early, one for the late. And So in one, we'll use a switch point where it's just up to a certain year, it's Poisson with rate A, and after that rate B. And we'll use another one where we actually have a continuous sigmoid kind of transition. Because you will kind of say, probably it's more realistic that some change happens over time and we don't have a rapid step, because that's usually not how big systems work. But we can actually model both in TensorFlow probability. So we just have a rate function that we pass on here. And okay, what we'll have is a count model. And for that, we have a joint distribution. Right, because we have several distributions that will go together, right? We have the early, the late one, and the combined one. And then we put priors on both of these. So we have one rate that we call E. That's the early rate. And we just use an exponential distribution with a rate 1.0. So it's a quite weak prior. So we basically say about the rate, we don't know anything. And you could put in a stronger prior, right? Because you kind of know that the early rate is probably somewhere around 4, and maybe you have an idea of sort of, you could model this on the drilling activity ongoing. So if you have extra information, that's where you would put it in this prior, right? So if you know, for a given well that we drill, the probability of a spill is X, and I have an idea of what the average activity is, then I could put this in as a prior. But for now, to limit our sort of ideas that we put in, we use the same exponential prior for both of those. So we have an early rate and a late rate. And then we have a switch point. And what we use for this switch point prior, we just say, okay, uniform from actually, okay, I should use, so our years are spills.index to not have to type this. So basically we say, well, from the minimum to the maximum, any switch point is equally likely. So no informative prior here. And that's just me saying, well, I don't know. Just model, you pick the best switch point. I could restrict this. I could say, well, the shale explosion happened between the 1990s and 2010s. So I could restrict it between here, but I just say, okay, anything is equally likely. And then I have a conditional probability and this is encoded in TensorFlow probability as a function. And this function, lambda, takes the switch point, the late rate and the early rate. Just notice that the order that goes in here is reversed. So first this L, then this, first this E, then this L, then this S. So just in the reversed order, like I set them up. And then I get an independent distribution. So this is basically just saying, so don't pay attention to this for now. So what I said is we have a Poisson distribution. And my rate is given by this function. Rate function, so this function will create the rate for us. And then again, given the years, so this is this guy. That's, you know what, let's we'll define those later. So the rate function, what it will do is it will take the years, and I need to convert it to a TensorFlow constant, so to get the that's just a little dance that I have to do for TensorFlow, but it's the years that goes in. So the rate function takes the years. Then of course it takes the switch point. It takes the late and the early rate. And it will spit out my rate. And that's for now all. So we'll have to get back to this in a minute. But okay, so we have made this independent, and now I kind of messed up with my brackets. Okay, return count model. Okay, so this will become clear in a minute. So now for the function. So let's look at the simplest possible sort of switch function, and that's just a step. And there is a function that we can use for this, and that's TensorFlow where. And it's actually quite easy. I can say true, false, 1, 0. So this will give this where the condition is true and the other one where the condition is false, right? So this is basically saying 1 where the condition is true, 12 where the condition is false. So it just picks from two values. Rate function switch point, and then I get the years, I get the switch point, the late and the early rate, and then I just say where the years are smaller than the switch point, right? So where the years are smaller, so where the year number is smaller than the switch point, I take the early rate, else I take the late rate. And now I can construct with this helper function my model. I can say model switch equal spill count model with rate function switch. And now I can take this model to, for example, sample. So model switch, I can sample from this model. All right, so and what the model did, quite simple, is it took a switch point from this uniform distribution, so uniform between 1970 and 2020. So it chose 1981. It took the late rate, so that's 2.4 from the exponential distribution, the early rate, 1.0. And then given those, it constructed the Poisson distribution and sampled from this Poisson distribution for each year. Yeah, does that make sense? So now for each year, we got a sample. And what I can do here is, ah, Jesus. Okay. So now the model chose a switch point, probably somewhere around here, and sampled basically a lot of zeros here and then some other right there. So that's just one example drawn from the distribution that my model creates. So it's just a little bit more complicated than what we did before. Remember, so we made this binomial distribution in the last course and just drew samples from it. And it's the same thing happening here, only that my model is a little bit more complicated, right? So I have an early rate, a late rate, a switch point, and then my experiments. And I need to draw from each of those distributions. Now what I want to do is, as I want to estimate my parameters, right? So maybe we need to get a little bit more complicated here, but let's just take this for now. So again, because you know this is just a TensorFlow probability model that works in many ways, like our distribution objects. We can make a log prop function very easy with that. So we can say define my target log prop, and again it takes the model, switch point, early rate, late rate, and what it returns is model log prop switch point, early rate, late rate, and DT is my spills. So now, basically, if I say, well, if I get a switch point, early late, and a early rate and a late rate, I can get a log prop out of this model. So let's try this out. Target log prop of my switch point model. And then choosing a switch point, let's say 2000. Choosing an early rate, let's say 4 year. A late rate. And again, here you would say maybe 8 a year or so, I get a log prop. Now, this is not quite what we want. So what this spits out is for each year, because I have an observation for each year, it says the observations that I have, namely the spills, this, what is the log prop of each of the observations? But what we want is the log prop of the model. And this is simply done by sort of this independent distribution, basically takes a vector like this and makes a joint distribution out of this. And all that we need to, well, of independent observations. So all we need to do here is say, sort of which dimension is, and you can have, so you can have models that act on multiple dimensions, and that's basically a function of the shape of your data. And here we just have, you know, one dimension. So the correct dimension that this should work with is one. So you, and the parameter is called reinterpreted batch endims. It's a mouthful, but what this basically does is, so now the same stuff happens. So I can still sample from this. All that happens is that instead of getting a log prop from each of the observations, I get a joint log prop. And that's, of course, just the sum, right? So nothing really happens here. It's just this tells it, well, all those individual log props for each observation, sum them up. And this is typically what you have to do, because if you have any data, you have multiple observations. And you're generally, when you make a model, you're not interested in the probability of each individual data point given your model, but the probability of all the data given your model, right? So this is just the Bayesian P of model, or P of parameters given the data, right? And this is exactly what we get out here. So what is the probability given those parameters? So we have a model of three parameters, the switch point, the early rate, the late rate. What is the log prop of the data given the model? That's all, right? So we take the model that we made, fill it, so feed it with the data points that we have, feed it with the parameters, and TensorFlow probability gives us the probability of the data under our modeling assumptions. So it's, you know, it's just in many more lines of code, because we have this three parameter model now. We need to, you know, do a bit of bookkeeping here. But it's really nothing different than we did the last time. So we had this binomial model. We had an observation, and you know, the binomial model was super easy because the observation is one data point. You have a total number of trials. You have this number of successes. And you have one parameter, which is sort of the probability of a success in an individual trial. And then you bake this together in a model, and in the binomial, it was just binomial, total tries and successes, and that was it. But it's still sort of the same mechanics. So we define our parameters. Now we have to say, okay, you get a bunch of, it's not one Poisson distribution, but one Poisson distribution for each year. The ones before the switch point will look all the same, and the ones after the switch point will look all the same, but they're still individual distributions, and we just need to multiply them together to get the total probability. So there's really nothing else happening. And in the binomial, we were also a bit lazy by saying, well, I don't want to say anything about the parameter, so I just say, well, it's a uniform, and I don't even care about it. Here we put this in explicitly, just to show you how you put these priors on the parameters in. But the mechanics is exactly the same. And now that we have this target log prop, let's actually see what the most, so what are the parameters that are sort of the best fit of our model, right? And that you would call the maximum a priori approximation. That's just, you know, optimizing, really. And you remember, actually, TensorFlow is really good at optimizing. So we can do this quite easily with the framework that we looked at last time. So map estimate. So I just need to define, remember, TensorFlow has these variables. So let's start with a switch point at 2000. Early rate variable starting at, I don't know, 2. And the late rate, let's start at 3. Doesn't really matter. And the optimizer is so good that, you know, if you don't put in anything super crazy, it will optimize just fine. And then we say, okay, our loss function is just minus target log prop of our model switch SEL done. All right, so at the starting parameters, 2000, 2, 3, the negative, so again, we need to be a bit careful. We want the maximum log prop, so the maximum a posteriori likelihood, but okay, we minimize a loss, right? So the loss should be as little as possible, so we put this minus in here. So the negative log prop at these parameter values is just that. Good. And now all we need to do is say, okay, our optimizer is tf.optimize stochastic gradient descent, because why not? Learning rate doesn't really matter how much. So it's, you know, it's a so harmless problem that this is TensorFlow does this before lunch. And then we want a history of our losses just to see how this optimization goes. And var hist, so we want the history of each variable. So for the switch point, for the early and the late rate. And now we can start. So we can say for in range, let's say 50 optimizer steps, 50 stochastic gradient descent steps, opt.minimize the loss given S, E, and L. And then we just say, well, we want to remember the loss. Loss. And just extracting the variable. And then var history of E dot append E dot number. And then we copy this 3 times. I should use a for loop, I know, but we remember the history of the switch point and the late rate. And look at the results. So our loss is now at 120. So the log prop went down quite a bit. We can also say, how did the history of the loss look like? Okay, so we're all very close to the minimum already. So the switch point is actually, it stayed at 2000. So that was a good initial guess. The early rate 3.3 and the late rate 6.1. So that's sort of saying, okay, the 2000 was a good switch point. And yeah, of course, right. Yeah, makes sense. Rate of 6 around here and rate of 3 around here. And we could make it a bit more difficult. Start at 1 and 1. And at 1,000, I cannot start because I have only data from 1970 on. You know, still it took a bit longer, but okay. No, I actually don't change my switch point. That's interesting. Probably because it's a step function, it's hard for it to guess the gradient. We end up with similar rates though, huh? So to make this a bit more differentiable, let's make another model. And now with all the machinery, so you probably thought, geez, why did we go through so much pain? Well, because now basically we can make another rate function with a sigmoid, the same years, switch point, late, early. And just to make sure I don't get this wrong, because this can be a real pain in the ass. So we return, and that's the typical, so E plus TF dot sigmoid years minus switch point times L minus E. So the sigmoid goes from 0 to 1 with the, so if years minus S, if this goes to minus infinity, it goes to 0. If this goes to plus infinity or a positive value, this goes to 1, right? So in the extreme cases, when this is 0, we have E plus nothing. So then it's E. If this goes to 1, then we have E plus L minus E, so L. So this is basically saying, oh, I want a smooth transition from my early rate to my low rate. Nothing crazy happening here. And this is just as well as this one, a switch point function. So now I can make another model sigmoid. Spell count model with my rate function sigmoid. So instead of my loss using the switch point, I use the sigmoid to make my model. Ah, Jesus. Year. All right. Still. Where does this happen? I didn't recreate my models. Okay, good. Just as easy to optimize. And now actually it went, so it moved this model. And so the switch point is just too steep for the optimizer to pick up a gradient in that direction. Right, so nice. Now we have a, and this is also just to show how nice it is with TensorFlow probability to plug and play these kind of models, right? So if you want a different switch point function, you just plug it in. TensorFlow can differentiate all of these. So it's very easy to use these. So that's your maximum a priori estimate. And you know, remember the last time we had for each parameter, we had a sort of histogram of probable values, you know? So we could say something about what is the probability of the that my model lands at this given parameter value. Here I just get the peak of that distribution, the maximum a priori. And that tells me, okay, 2002 is the most likely switch point here with the rate of 3.3 before and 6.5. And that's a doubling of the rate, right? But now I would really like to see, how do those rates really compare, right? Because I have no feeling, okay, so the maximum is at 3.3 here and 6.4 there. But how does the distribution of those numbers look? Do they overlap? Is there a lot of overlap? Am I really sure that my data supports a switch point, right? And this I don't get out of the maximum a posteriori. I just get the peaks. What I can do, and there's a very often used sort of second order approximation. You could assume that my a posteriori distributions, they're all Gaussian. And if they're Gaussian, so I know, so I've evaluated those with the stochastic gradient descent, so I know the gradients at those maximum points. And if I know the gradient, I can sort of estimate what the standard deviation is. Because out of my, so I know how my Gaussian distribution looks, and I know what the connection between the gradient at the peak and the standard deviation is. But that's, of course, only working if I assume that my a posteriori distributions are Gaussian. And you know, with the switch point function, they most certainly won't be. So I need something else. And that's something else. There are two options here that you have. Remember the last time we basically just used a range of values for my parameters, right? So I had this, so if I have a simple model that's just, going back to the binomial model, right? So I have a range of thetas, so TF dot length space from 0.0 to 1.0 in steps of, I don't know, 50. So in 50 steps. And I say binomial distribution with a total count equal, let's say 50. And my props, no likelihoods. Yeah, keep forgetting the correct name. Props. It's just so that's the probabilities, right? So here I set up a model, or actually a bunch of models, with my different ranges of theta as the probabilities, right? And then I can say simple model dot prob of, let's say my observation is, I don't know, out of 50, I got 20 successes, 20 heads up out of 50 coin tosses, right? Now I can actually say, okay, for each of my possible parameter values, that's the probability. So if I plot this against the thetas, I actually get sort of, okay, what is the probability of this true probability value to be bigger than 50-50, right? So I would assume if my observation is 20 out of 50 tosses, I would say, well, this is probably not a fair coin, right? But how probable is it? Well, I can just say, well, is this bigger than, okay, I would have to sample from it, but I can say, is this bigger than 0.3 or bigger than 0.5? Okay, yeah, no, this is not right. So now to ask questions on this, I need to sample from this distribution, That's what we did last time. So we did a posteriori sampling. But here I really can see sort of, okay, how much, I could ask the question, how much of my curve here is to the left of 0.5? And that gives me sort of the probability of this being a really unfair coin. Here I just get point estimates. Right, so the estimates here are the peaks of those curves for each of the parameters. But I can do the same that I did here in my simple model. I can, so you would call this a grid approximation, even though this is not a grid, this is just a linear space of parameter values. But I could sort of create a parameter grid for each of my of the switch point, the early rate, the late rate, and then sample for each of those and see how those distributions look. And that's actually pretty easy to do. I can just say, I have a built-in function. It's called mesh grid. And for that, I need to tell it what are the individual parameter values that I'm interested in. So my early rates that I'm interested in are from 2. Ah, geez. This is not what I wanted. So I want to investigate those between 2 and 5 in steps of 20. My late rates, and this is just eyeballing it. Right? This is just saying, okay, this is the maximum a posteriori numbers that we get. So we want something in that range, right? So here I go from 5 to 10. Again, in steps of 20. And then my switches is something between 1990 and 2010. I should use floats here in steps of 20. And now you have to be a bit careful. So if I want a grid approximation, so I'll have 20 by 20 by 20 points. So 8,000 points. That's already, if I want 30 by 30 by 30, I have 9,000 points. So this goes exponentially. So I need to be very careful. With three parameters, it's kind of okay. With four, you can get away. But then if you have a lot of parameters in your model, you will just get killed by the dimensionality of this. Switches, early rates, late rates, I get a TensorFlow grid. And this is basically so this grid is a list of three tensors. And so this is the values for the year, the switch point, the values for the early rate, and the values for the late rate, while varying all the others. All right, so if you had just two values with two states each, this would be like 0, 1, 1, 0, and so on. So all the permutations of those. And So all we have to do is now say, so now we can already calculate our log probs. Is we use our target log prop function with the sigmoid model. And then we just say, okay. So this is a little bit saving me the work. So if I want all the numbers, let's say, for the switch point, I would say grid zero, so that's the switch point numbers, dot reshape. TF.reshape, these guys. And minus one just says make it flat. So the right size of dimension. So this is just taking this three-dimensional grid and making it flat. And that flat grid I can put into my function. So I say tf.reshape grid I minus one for I in range three. And this star is basically just saying, take this list and put this, the elements of this list as arguments to my function. Okay. Yeah, okay. Now, so what I wanted to do here is take my model and basically, so what my model understands for now is putting in three values for my parameters and my observations and calculating a log prop. What I want to do here is I want, well, actually 8,000 parameters, so 8,000 values for my parameters into the model. And that it doesn't understand. So it says, well, I multiply stuff together and one is shape 49, and that's basically the years. So I have 49 data points and then I have 8,000 parameter values. And my model says, I don't know how to put them together. So what I need to do is I need to go back to my model, unfortunately, and add one extra complication. And I need to say here, well, what I want is, I want you to add an extra dimension to this so that it understands how to multiply these things together. And that's just a TensorFlow. So don't try too hard to understand this. It's basically just a incompatibility with a TensorFlow sort of way it does multiplications. So all you need to do is say, add another dimension here. So tf.newdim. New axis. It's actually, so for all my parameters, I say, okay, add a new axis, and that's and then basically it knows how to multiply those examples and the parameters together. And you'll do this a lot when we do so at a later stage. What we'll do is Monte Carlo approximation of these guys. And then what you actually want to do is you want to not just run one Monte Carlo simulation, but a bunch of copies just to make sure that they do approximately the same thing, because these simulations, they can go crazy. So to make sure that you don't approximate anything crazy, you just run 10 copies of your simulation and just make sure that they all do the same thing. And this is just, yeah, one of the, remember when I said TensorFlow probability is not always that easy to use? Yes, that's an example of this. And it took me a while to figure these things out myself. So yeah, don't worry too much if this kind of stuff is hard. And ask me if you run into these kind of problems. It's hard to understand sometimes what the issue really is from a 5 pages error message. Okay, so now I have my log props, and now I can really inspect sort of the equivalent of this figure for my different parameter values. But now this is easy to plot. So I plot a probability versus different parameter values. Now it's not so easy because I have three. So I could do sort of a contour plot in two dimensions, but then I still have a third dimension that I need to keep fixed. So let's do the following. Let's look at slices through those. So we have this three-dimensional hypercube, and we just take a slice out of this. So first we need to put this back into this grid shape. So we say reshape this. Remember we have 20 different values for each parameter and three parameters. So now log props looks the same as our grid values. And now we can, for example, look at the switch points, the probabilities of each of those switch points. So this is the first dimension of this hypercube, right? So the switch points is here, the first one. So here we want to see everything, and then we need to decide where do we want to fix those two values, and here I just take the middle of this cube. Yeah, so if we look at E's at 10 and L's at 10, so what this graph shows is fixing the early rate to 3.5 and the late rate to 7.6. This is the probability distribution of the switch points. If I now look, for example, at different rates, so for example, I choose 5 and the 15th here. So I make this smaller to 2.7 and this higher to 8.9. Again, I can now, so now the probability distribution for the switch points changed. So again, mechanically, nothing different happened than here, only that I have three dimensions. And you probably know, your master students know that whenever I add dimensions, I add a problem. So it's just mechanically a bit different. In the code structure a bit different, but mechanically what we do is it's the exact same thing. And then again with argmax, you can so now it gives you the indices of the, okay, I need to figure out, I thought that was, okay, I'll get back to you the next time. So you should be able to now, tune across, so what you should be able to do now is get from this again, the a posteriori probability, right? So the maximum a posteriori. By just selecting the max. So, okay. The max of log props is of course tf dot reduce max log props. So this gives you the maximum log prop, but we want to know where the coordinates are to get the sort of parameter values for the maximum. I thought Max was the right guy. But so maybe one other thing to look at is now the distribution of the early and late rates. Probably the last thing we can do today. So again, we said our grid is switches early, late, right? So this is the early rates. This is the late rate. And there you can actually see sort of the scales are now a bit different, but so this has a peak around 6, but the peak is not very peaky, right? And here neither. So you would say there's probably a lot of overlap between those two curves. So and then again, you can now, you could sample from this and say, okay, in how many of the cases is actually the earlier rate higher, lower than the later rate or higher? And then I can really query my model to say sort of, are my assumptions right? With what confidence can I say that my assumptions are right? Yes. I think I'll leave you at that and give you a bit of time back, unless there are questions. So if you, I see a few confused faces. So, okay. If you want to take one thing away from today is, well, you can load pandas from HTML pages. If there are two things, and I hope you take away more than one thing, is this. And don't be confused by this rate function. It's just, you know, appearing here as a parameter, but this guy, try to understand this a bit, because this is how you make more complex models. And it's really, so this model is really not that complex. How was this? Jesus. So this is just a verify. No. Ah, okay. Sorry. This is not a model yet. So we need to hear model. You can sort of show the model graph, resolve graphs. That's the one. So this just says, okay, I have three parameters. And these parameters, they are not dependent on anything. It's just three model parameters, switch point, late rate, early rate. And then I have this Poisson model that basically is conditional on S, L, and D. So this is just, you know, one conditional probability. And it's exactly this sort of the material that Christos was showing you, sort of probability of the data given the parameters times probability of the parameter, right? So here you have three parameters with a probability attached to them, and a conditional probability of the data given your parameters. So there's really not much happening here, besides, you know, so it's three parameter model instead of a one parameter model. Maybe I should have gone to a two parameter model first, but I thought you could abstract from, you know, so you can just interpolate between the two then. And what these do is really sort of, I have two Poisson processes with different rates, right? That's how you would model something like this. I have counts, right? How do I model counts with Poisson? And then I have two processes, one here, one there. And then I need to decide how the switch point is. And so basically my rates here, they will just, you know, so if I go rate function switch, that's the easiest. Years with a switch point of 1990, and early rate of 1, a late rate of 10. That's how it will look. Late rate of, to make this look more like the data. As I have 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, and then I reach the switch point and then I get 10. And with the sigmoid, it's just probably I need to go now 1990 dot. Right, so there it goes from 1 smoothly to 10. So I could plot this. Yeah. That's a, okay, that's a sigmoid. And instead of going from 0 to 1, it goes from 1 to 10. And these are, point by point, these are the rates that I plug into my Poisson process. So I get 49 Poisson processes, and with the switch point, the first ones look the same and the last ones look the same. So I just get a step function. Here it's a kind of transition, but it's, you know, it's a quite steep transition. But each of those, I should actually plot this as a, so I get for each year, or not each year, because on some years I don't have an observation, but for each year here, I get a rate. And all I ask now is, okay, given these parameters, so you know, if I look at this guy and look at this guy, okay, this is not very, this doesn't look very the same. And all I say, well, luckily I have a probabilistic model. So I ask my model, okay, what values of the switch point, the late rate and the early rate maximize the probability. And I did this in two ways, where the first one was just, I optimize, because hey, I'm in TensorFlow, so why not? So I just use a stochastic gradient descent to minimize the loss function and then say, okay, this is the best fit. These three parameters maximize my loss, minimize my loss, maximize my a posteriori. And then I said, well, look, last time we basically just plugged a lot of different values in it, so to sort of make a grid approximation on this. And with this grid approximation, I get the headache of having to deal with all these dimensions. But what I get out is actually curves instead of points. But yes, so step one, just be happy that you can now read tables from HTML, which is cool. Then, you know, this is how you set up models. I made it a bit complicated with this rate function, but this was basically to show you how flexible this is. But basically to create a model, this is enough. This name thing basically just says, okay, I'll give you a dictionary with naming all my functions. And that's actually pretty good. Because if I were to say, I call this now late LA instead of early, and then I try to make my models here and resolve the graph, so I get a problem. And it tells me, hey, there's this key error LA. You haven't defined this variable, which is, you know, a good thing. Okay. This is just making sure I don't shoot myself in the foot, because there are three variables to take care of and they get passed to a lambda function. It's just making sure I name things correctly. Because well, in the first version of this TensorFlow probability, people were making very stupid mistakes with this. But okay, so this is just second thing you should take away. This is just a way to define a model. I have three priors and I have this sort of collection of Poisson. And since I'm interested not in the probability of the data at each of these points, I just say independent, make independent, and in the first dimension just multiply them together to get one probability. And at first you will just copy this code and adapt it to your needs. And then at some point you'll understand better how these things go together. And then, okay, we had to do this funny dance with this new axis just so I can plug in multiple values for my parameters. But yeah, so this is what you should take a bit of time to try to understand, just how to make those. I can, you know, so if you want to play around with this a bit, take the example that we had last time, this very simple example here. the binomial, sorry, the binomial one, and put a prior on this. So instead of the simple model that's just a binomial, put a prior on it. Say, well, I think I have some belief. I think it should be between this and that. And then you can play around with this a bit. Make a very simple model. So instead of three parameters, you'll have one. So one prior and one conditional. Yeah, if no questions, you have half an hour now to collaborate or bug me with questions. I leave the video on for a little while. So the audience, the remote audience can ask questions. I'll switch it off in like 10 minutes if no questions come, but I'll mute.
I have a question for assignment two.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if I have misunderstood something or other people have, but like the project I got back to peer review or match accuracy, I've gotten like a PDF file of the whole Jupyter notebook. And like in the assignment, it says the purpose of this assignment is to obtain some practice in the art of reproducibility. So am I supposed to just run the same script? Of course, I will get the same accuracy. And yeah, I'm not sure what to do. Should I like grade it or yeah?
Yeah, I think you should. Huh.
I should grade it. So I should grade.
Grade is a strong word. You should
peer review it.
Yeah. Or form an opinion about it.
Yeah.
And share it with the other group. If you would like the code, then just ask the group to give you a copy of the notebook. Some basic remarks on IT security here. You know, running computer code on your laptop is a dangerous sport.
Yeah, I see.
Or don't run stuff that you don't. So actually, you know, giving someone a PDF, I would much prefer to give someone a PDF than giving them a Jupyter notebook and exchanging Jupyter notebooks. And, you know, since I use my computer for work, I will not run anyone's code except in a VM that's not connected to anything.
Sorry.
So just a little remark also to rerun it. So if you run codes twice, you're not guaranteed to give the same results. You know, just giving the example here where we sampled from our model, if I do this again, well, I'll get another different sample because it's a random process, right?
Yeah. So
be a bit careful about statements of, you know, of course, it will produce twice the same. But yes, so you had a follow-up.
Yeah, but the thing is, like in the assignment, it says just use Bootstrap or cross-validation to, tune a parameter. But I have gotten like error analysis and like feature analysis. Like I feel I have done more in assignment than like, to give her like a good opinion, I have to like really sit down and use time on this. So is this a big assignment? Like, no.
Don't use too much time. And
I can just,
there's a limit in scope. There's also a limit in what you can do. If you think you can learn, so you know, if you have a student that's maybe a bit more advanced and you can learn from looking at the code and you think that's a valuable use of your time. So, you know, just look at what the assignment says, and it says sort of, you know, it says nothing about error analysis and, you know.
Yeah.
So as a minimum, look at what it says in the assignment and then sort of comment on the points given in the assignment. If you think you can learn from going through the rest of the code, fine, but you don't need to. So it shouldn't take hours and hours and hours.
Yes, thank you.
Sure. So yeah, on this original project one, so you're not forced to join a group, of course. So it's that, yeah. So I think everybody can read it also, the offline participants. So we don't have to join a group. You don't have to join a group. But there's several advantages to joining a group. The biggest advantage is that Christos and I don't have to correct 50 individual assignments, and that will make us happy. And you want to keep us happy. The other thing is that, you know, we have very different skill sets in this class. There are people with a more statistics background, people with a more computer science background, and you can really profit from working together. And also think about, you know, that it's much better for your own understanding. The best thing you can do for your own understanding is teaching it to someone. So there's also a huge benefit there. One of the reasons why I'm teaching at all. Finally figure out this Bayesian stuff. Yeah, I'm joking, but it's very good. It's very good to teach and explain stuff to other people. So I strongly encourage you to join a group. If you absolutely don't want to, that's of course up to you. But it will of course increase the amount of work for you also significantly. And if you want to, you know, maybe recap some of these TensorFlow things and at the same time do project work, it's gonna be a lot. So. Any more questions? I keep connected for a few more minutes if something comes up. Okay, so it looks like there's no more questions online, so I'll stop the recording and give you a last chance to ask questions that you don't want recorded.